Hear that? Up there in that tree?
Oh, yeah.
Tweet, tweet.
It's me and all my homies love native manu, and it's about to start.
Yeah, bloody is. Welcome to me and all my homies love... me and all my homies love native manu. God, sorry about that, guys. This week, we are talking about the takahe. And here to talk with me, as always, about our precious native manu is the Birdman of BFM. It's Pete Tonda. Welcome to the show, Pete.
Morena, love. Great to be here, as always.
This week in Te Whanau, we're talking about the takahe, a bird we will all be familiar with. Pete, but can you please give us the classification of this manu?
Yeah, the takahe, it's endemic. An endemic rail?
Yes, I just learnt what that is this morning.
Yeah, the rails are sort of ground-dwelling birds, often living around wetlands.
Yep.
And they include crakes, coots, and gallinules. And the takahe is the largest gallinule
in the globe. That's a good one. I want to get that tattooed across my forehead.
It means they've got red beaks and they've got a forehead shield and long toes.
Just like you.
I've got short toes, unfortunately. And I'm tall. And
That's crazy.
It affects my balance.
I can imagine. You're a very tall person.
Yeah. I'd like longer toes.
Maybe this year you'll grow longer toes.
If I find the right balm to use.
Yeah, send through any suggestions, guys. Anyway,
right.
Back to the topics.
Anyway, yes. So they arrived from in Aotearoa from Australia about 4 million years ago.
Wow, yeah.
And they're sort of derived from the same swamp hen as the pukeko.
Yeah.
But the pukeko arrived about 1,000 years ago, so it looks very much the same as the swamp hen. From Australia.
Of course.
So the takahe, they evolved into two species. The North Island species was called the moho.
Moho, aye.
And it was slighter in form but taller.
Yes.
And they went extinct about 1894, unfortunately.
And so the takahe is like the moho's fat cousin.
Yes, yes. And so the takahe was almost gone when Europeans arrived, and they only found about three or four takahe alive between 1849 and 1898,
which
and then
is,
nothing.
Yeah.
And so everyone concluded they were extinct.
Yeah.
But then 50 years later, this Geoffrey Orbell was convinced they were still around, and he went searching for them. And in 1948, he found three live takahe in the Murchison Mountains.
Imagine the feeling of finding
Incredible.
That manu.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Yep. And so the manu sort of came back from the dead.
Yeah.
Bit of an avian Jesus, really.
Oh, my God. Also the New Zealand hide and seek champion.
That's true. That's
from 1898
That'll never get beaten.
Someone tell me if you've been hiding for 40 or more years. Maybe you have been.
And so then it's a long journey to coach the manu back from really low numbers and no genetic diversity. And that's the problem with bringing these birds back from the brink.
Yeah.
They've got no genetic diversity, which makes them really susceptible to diseases and increase egg infertility.
Mm.
We've got the same challenges with the likes of the kakapo, the kokako, the black robin, which is the karuri.
Karuri. Yeah.
But now the population's around 500, which is awesome.
That's freaking great news.
But they do need ongoing support.
Yeah. Our beautiful fat manu. I love them so much. So, yes, talking about tangata whenua relationship to the takahe, the name takahe is derived from the Māori word takahea. which means stamping one's feet on the ground. And I guess it's kind of quite resemblant of how the takahe walks.
They move about. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Very heavy-footed. a treasured taonga species to Ngāi Tahu. And it's actually in their treaty, something in their treaty settlement about this, hey, Pete?
Absolutely, to recognise their relationship and for the need for them to be involved in all aspects of conservation work and looking after the manu.
Yeah, important.
Which is cool.
Some other stuff. Used to be an important food source for Māori, with the birds weighing between 2.3 and 3.8 kilograms.
Big.
Say it.
It's kind of... what are they? It's gone out of my head. I've got a complete blank.
This morning me and Pete were talking about it and I said they would be really tasty to eat. And Pete just said to me, big drumsticks.
Look, I had a senior moment then. I couldn't remember drumsticks. I don't.
And obviously we're not going to eat them now, guys, but it is a, it's good to imagine. It's fun to imagine, you know?
Yeah. Yes.
and their feathers were also used for kahu haruhuru.
Yeah, high status ones.
Yeah, amazing. And it would have been made really beautiful kakahu. Yeah. We've also, Pete's also found some whakatauki. So the first one is Katu te moho kia ora ake anō. What does that talk about, Pete?
The takahe stands in order to live again. And that celebrates the survival of them being brought back from the brink of extinction.
Mm.
And, you know, awesome conservation success story.
It's amazing. And then we've got a second whakatauki, he mana ko te kaura ko re ai. What is that talking about?
Yeah, right? Wishing the crayfish is why they are gone. And this is quite abstract.
Yeah, we've been struggling to get our head around it.
But it sort of references the history of the takahe thought to be extinct, then recovered, rediscovered. And it sort of reminds us to treasure and carefully look after our taonga species because they can easily disappear if they're taken for granted.
Absolutely. But they're certainly not taken for granted nowadays, which is amazing. And even made an appearance on the New Zealand safety video, video. That was incredible. Did you see that?
I did.
but yes, Pete, how would you describe this manu?
Most people sort of familiar with the look of them. They're like a pook on steroids, so they're just big.
Can you explain what a pook is?
Pook is a pukeko. and they can't fly, whereas the pukeko can.
Yep.
They got gorgeous colouring. So the blue head, neck and breast. Peacock sort of blue on the shoulders through to turquoise and olive green on the wings and the back. I thought they look a bit like a walking polished power shell from a distance if you're short-sighted. they've got stout red legs and a very large, powerful, bright red beak, which is used to munch through tough tussock and roots. I'm having trouble with my words.
Yeah, don't worry, me too.
And they've got that red shield on the top of the bill, on the forehead. Looks a little bit like a Viking helmet if you stretch
your imagination.
And what's
that red shield for?
I don't know.
Fighting bitches. Fighting other birds.
It's just a pretty staunch looking symbol, isn't it?
It's awesome. I think we need to get one of those. But yes, where do they live and what are they eating? We've talked about the Murchison Mountains, but they're more widespread now.
They used to be widespread, but pushed to the brink of extinction through hunting, really. But since their discovery, captive breeding programs, very slow growth in the population. It took a long time to figure out how to do captive breeding.
Yeah.
At one stage, Doc was using little puppets and recorded sounds, but they're not stupid, the manu, and they saw that was just a hoax.
Good
effort and points for creativity. But they've sort of discovered it's better to kind of leave them in the natural environment and do intensive predator control around the breeding sites.
Yeah.
They've got some small breeding populations and they move them around islands like Tiritiri Matangi, Motutapu, Kapiti, Mana and Maud.
Yeah.
But in recent years there's been some quite big releases in the Gulan Downs and Kaharangi National Park.
Yeah,
and
okay.
Greenstone Valley and Rees Valley in the upper Whakatipu.
Amazing.
Plus a few little sanctuaries
like,
here and there. So
Zealandia and Wellington, they've got Takahi in there.
Yeah.
And Greenstone Valley, well, that's a very beautiful part of Aotearoa.
Yeah.
It's amazing to see Takahi back in that region.
Yeah. So it's not a very exciting diet.
Yeah.
It's quite austere. Starchy leaf bases are the tussock and sedge plants. And sedge is like reeds.
Okay.
And they eat tussock seeds. And then if the snow cover's too heavy, they kind of move into the forest and eat underground roots and green ferns.
Mm-hmm.
On islands like Motutapu, they just eat grass. But they can opportunistically get a bit of protein from moths, beetles and wetter. And occasionally lizards and the odd duckling.
That, oh my God. I didn't see that note that you put in there.
Ducklings are a little bit targeted, the poor things.
Oh, yeah. And they're so cute. I might protect the ducklings at all costs. That's good. They got some protein in there. I was beginning to think that's a very depressing diet,
yes.
And I wouldn't be happy if I was
exactly.
a tucker eating that stuff. But ka pai. You've written, Pete said they've got a special power. What's the special power?
Is it a special power?
And so, I think it is.
Oh, you do? Okay, let's take it as one. So this characteristic, it astounded me, and I didn't believe it, and I had to verify it. from the DOC website, it states that in a single day, one takahe can deliver up to 9 metres of poo.
24 hours, 9 metres of poo.
That's a serious mobile fertiliser factory.
That is incredible. I wish I could do 9 metres of poo a day.
Per year, that's over 3.2 kilometres.
I really like how you've added that up.
I would not like that myself.
You wouldn't like that?
I can see some, infrastructure problems happening. Anyway.
Yeah, well, you're getting old and it's all breaking down a little bit in there, isn't
it? Tell me about it. We could have a series about that.
Yeah, about anyway. Pete's infrastructure, but we won't get into that.
No, hell no.
But yes, in terms of breeding, they're laying 1 to 3 eggs from September to January.
Yep.
And then they're sharing incubation.
Yes. Chick rearing duties, they share that.
Yeah, that's good. Co-parenting.
They're very they're monogamous pairs and they mate for life.
Yep.
So that's cool. Eggs are yellow brown with kind of reddish purple blotches on them.
Do you know how big the eggs are, Pete?
They're quite big.
Yeah.
I don't know the exact size, but they're decent sized eggs.
Yeah.
Incubation is 30 days. The chicks stay on the nest for about a week and then they follow Ma and Pa around begging for food. And then if it starts raining, they run back to the nest and, get the protection of the parents.
Okay.
But very occasionally there's a thruple.
Oh, my God.
Or even a quadruple.
Oh, God.
Commune. Yeah.
And they're all just loving on each other and that's awesome.
They are.
Yeah.
Yes. And, so the young usually hang about with the parents until the next breeding season, or they can stay a second year, like many kids today never leave home. It's okay.
And I'm still running around after my mum begging her for food.
Yeah.
But
that's
she,
okay.
That's
it's
okay. She's got the
it's
money and I like the food she buys me. But yes, in terms of threats, Pete, what are we talking there?
Well, early threats were them being heavily hunted for food.
Mm.
Now they're fully protected and a heap of resources are invested in their survival.
Yes.
There's some natural hazards like avalanches or really cold winters.
Yes.
They can knock a few over.
Especially when they're living in these quite alpine areas, eh?
Yeah. Predation by stoats in particular. I mean, they're pretty good at defending themselves from a stoat, but if there's continued sustained attacks, they'll succumb.
Do you think we need to, like, issue a memo to the stoats and just say, like, please stop or something? Because, like, I don't think they're getting the message.
No, we just need to get rid of them.
Yeah. I was going to try and talk to them.
No mercy. No. There's some food competition from the red deer.
Like
they eat the same
wild
food.
Deer.
Yeah, introduce red deer. Yeah, they eat the same food.
Okay.
But there's quite, good. I don't know. I'd prefer no deer to be New Zealand. But
yeah.
A lot of people hunt them. And if we keep them well managed in terms of population numbers, I suppose we can live with it.
You heard it first.
And genetic and breeding, that's the battle to sort of manage breeding and shift the birds around and try and...
So by shifting the birds around from different locations, we combat
over time
the...
you might get little smidgens of variation.
Yeah.
And then as the population gets bigger and time goes by, you get a little bit of gene mutation and variation and, I don't know, eventually they might grow a bit more... resilience.
Which is what we need to have a thriving tuckahead population.
Yeah,
that
but
continues
hey,
to
this
go.
Is a massive celebration for their rediscovery and their survival.
It
It's awesome.
What a comeback. No one's ever made a comeback so strong like the tuckahead.
It's impressive.
Yeah, and you got a song to play? What's your waiata of the day?
Yeah, Marlon Williams, O Atura.
O Atura.
And it's a song about sort of isolation. It sort of suits the lost and found Takahe that were isolated for so long in the Murchison Mountains for 50 years. So it seemed like a good song.
Yep.
And it's a beautiful song.
It's a beautiful waiata. And also Marlon Williams from Kaitahu as well.
Yeah.
So it's an important connection there as well.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Thanks, Pete. See you next week, brother.
Ka kite.
Ka kite.
Ko au anake ki te waka, ki te moana. Kaore kau e matangi, kaore he ahane. Titiro mai, titiro mai. Te ama ka tau ke atu nei hau atura ka mate au ki te moana marie ka Oh,
Isn't that beautiful?
That was me and all my homies love Native Manu, only on 95 BFM.